President Trump is escalating his personal attacks on Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, calling him a dictator.
Trump is pressuring the Ukrainian to submit to peace talks that so far have not included Ukraine. The U.S. also pressed Zelensky to sign an agreement that would share Ukraine's mineral rights with the United States. Zelensky has said Ukraine needs to be included in any negotiations, and it's in this context that the American president made a stream of remarks about the Ukrainian leader.
NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez is here to tell us more about this. Good morning, Franco.
Good morning, Michelle.
So tell us more about these dictator comments. What's the backstory here?
Yeah, I mean, what Trump called Zelensky a dictator without elections, basically echoing Russian talking points that Zelensky is an illegitimate leader and that Ukraine needs new elections. Now, in that same social media post, Trump also mocked Zelensky as a, quote, modestly successful comedian who basically tricked the U.S. into spending billions and billions of dollars on the war. Trump also appeared to blame Zelensky for the Russian invasion. All this, as Zelensky has raised concerns about, as Steve said, Ukraine being excluded from U.S. negotiations with Russia over ending the war. Here's Trump talking about it on Tuesday.
Today I heard, oh, well, we weren't invited. Well, you've been there for 3 years. You should have ended it 3 years. You should have never started it. You could have made a deal.
Now, just to be very, very clear, Ukraine did not start the war. Russia did. But Trump also suggested that Zelensky's popularity had fallen as low as 4%. It's actually over 40%, 50%.
So, okay, it's over 50%. Okay, I think it would be helpful here to go back into the history dating back to the first Trump administration. I'm talking about the history between these two men. Remind us of that. And how does this play into what's happening now?
Yeah, I mean, it was that first call with Zelensky back in 2019 where Trump asked for a favor to dig up dirt on Vice President Biden that kicked off Trump's first impeachment. I did speak with Andrea Kendall Taylor at the Center for New American Security, and she says Trump never really respected Zelensky and continues to carry a lot of negative baggage about him and Ukraine.
That definitely colors the lens through which he is approaching these negotiations with Russia and his sidelining of Zelensky in the process.
Now, of course, it's a complex relationship, and like many of Trump's relationships with foreign leaders, it can really be hot or cold depending on the circumstances.
How is Zelensky responding to these latest attacks?
I mean, very carefully. He's long used flattery to try to win favor with Trump, but he's been pushing back more recently. You know, after Trump questioned Zelensky's poll numbers, Zelensky told reporters that as much as he respects Trump, the U.S. president appears to be amplifying Russian disinformation.
What's next? What are we looking for?
Well, the French President Emmanuel Macron will be in Washington next week to meet with Trump. Also, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer is also expected to visit. Now, like many leaders, Macron and others are concerned about Europe not being part of these negotiations with Russia. The big worry across Europe is that even if a deal is reached, it won't be lasting, and that Russia will likely invade again, as he has before. The worry across Europe is that even if a deal is reached, it won't be lasting, and Russia will likely invade again, and possibly another European nation.
That is NPR's Franco Ordonez. Franco, thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
The Trump administration has posted a new online tracker that lists what it describes as the dollars saved by the Department of Government Efficiency.
That is the cost-cutting effort championed by Elon Musk and President Trump. Musk made a stream of claims on social media in recent weeks about big savings. A Doge website kept promising receipts, and this week the website published some, but those receipts add up to far less in savings than claimed.
NPR's Stephen Fowler did the math. He is here with us now to tell us what he found. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Okay, so what does this online Doge document claim to track?
So Monday, a savings page on Doge.gov went live. It says there's been savings so far of $55 billion. What's included in that? Doge says things like, quote, fraud detection, deletion, workforce reductions, programmatic changes, and regulatory savings. Exactly how those changes fit into the overall savings estimate is still TBD. They promise to keep adding more information. What we do have shared for now is a list of some of the government contracts DOGE says were canceled in recent days, what they call a wall of receipts that adds up to about $16 billion in alleged savings.
Important to note here that Elon Musk, the tech mogul, and also I want to point out a government contractor who heads up this group, insists that the work is transparent. So two questions here. Is it transparent? And now that you've been reviewing these contracts, how do their numbers stack up with what you have found?
The DOGE website, Michelle, is actually less transparent about these contracts than other public government data sources. So I had to search through 130,000 plus contracts that have been changed from January 20th to Monday to see if I could match them up with what DOGE shared. But the claims weren't off by just a little bit, but rather overstated by billions. Half of these savings claimed in these receipts comes from what DOGE said was actually a typo entered into the federal contract database a few years ago that made a listing worth up to $8 million look like $8 billion. That typo was fixed in the system a few weeks ago, but only fixed on the DOGE website yesterday. I will note here, DOGE has not responded to multiple requests from NPR to get clarity about their process.
Okay, well, that's a pretty big typo, Stephen. Okay, so what about the rest of the claims?
Here's three big things I found. One, more than half of the contracts listed haven't actually been canceled yet. Two, a third of the entries don't actually result in any savings by DOGE's own accounting. These are contracts that were already maxed out and couldn't see any more spending in the future. Three, the terminations I could verify only add up to about $2 billion saved, mainly through cuts that accompany the attempted dismantling of the Education Department, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and USAID.
Okay, so a purported $55 billion in savings shrinks to $16 billion, which upon further examination you found is just $2 billion. Well, one could argue that's still a lot of money, though.
Well, for you or me or even a nice business, yes. But the federal government spent more than $6.7 trillion with a T and a lot more zeros in the last fiscal year. Here's Jessica Riedel with the Manhattan Institute. She studied ways to cut wasteful spending from the budget from a conservative policy perspective.
It has to be done legally through Congress, and it has to be done competently by people who understand federal budget and accounting. And what Musk and DOGE are doing is more cosmetic symbolic changes that won't save money, but might sound good.
Basically, Riedel says any meaningful cuts to federal spending has to come from Congress having hard debates over how to do it.
Quickly, Stephen, if meaningful savings have to be achieved through difficult conversations in Congress and the DOGE effort isn't actually saving much money, what is the point?
Well, it's not about pinching pennies. It's about a manifestation of President Trump's overarching vision to remake the federal government by making it a lot smaller and a lot more aligned with his worldview.
That is NPR's Stephen Fowler. Stephen, thank you.
Thank you.
Hamas has released the bodies of what it says are four Israeli hostages back to Israel, including the body of a mother and her two young sons.
They will undergo forensic testing in Israel to confirm their identity. This is the first time that Hamas has released the bodies of hostages under the current ceasefire.
For more, we're joined by NPR's Kat Lonsdorf in Tel Aviv. Good morning, Kat. What, it must be a difficult day there.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty somber here.
So what can you tell us about the remains that were released? Who were they?
So Hamas says that they are the bodies of Shiri Bibas and her two young sons, Ariel and Kafir, as well as the body of 84-year-old Oded Lifshitz. All four of them were taken hostage in the October 7th, 2023 Hamas-led attack on southern Israel. Shiri's husband, Yarden, was also taken hostage with the rest of the family on that day. The Bibas family had become a symbol here in Israel of the plight of the hostages in Gaza. The two children, ages 4 and 9 months when they were captured, were the youngest hostages taken. So Bibas had become this household name here. Posters of their faces were plastered on sidewalks, and commemorations had been held in the children's birthdays. Yarden, the dad, was released alive earlier this month. Oded Lifshitz, the other body released today, was a retired journalist and peace activist. His wife had also been taken hostage, but was released earlier in the war.
Do we know how they died?
Well, Hamas says all four were killed by Israeli strikes during their time in captivity in Gaza. Israel says it will take the bodies to an Israeli forensic institute here in Tel Aviv, which will examine them and provide official identification and also seek to determine the cause of death.
This is the first time that Hamas has handed over bodies during this war. The previous releases have been of hostages who were alive. So would you mind just describing the scene? Like, what was it like both in Gaza and in Israel? Was it different?
Yeah, it was definitely more somber and much less celebratory on both sides. In Gaza, large crowds gathered in Khan Yunis in the south. Masked Hamas gunmen presided over a ceremony on a stage with four coffins draped in black. There were large posters on both sides of the stage in Hebrew and English. One depicted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as a fanged vampire. Another said that if Israel resumed the war, more hostages would come home in coffins. In Israel, unlike previous releases, the Hamas ceremony was not broadcast on Israeli TV, and Israeli media outlets did not publish images from it out of respect for the families. Once the caskets were in Israeli custody, they were then draped with Israeli flags, and then they were driven from Gaza to Tel Aviv, and large crowds gathered along the route to show solidarity and respect.
So you've obviously been following the ceasefire deal very closely. What's expected to happen next in the coming days and in the ceasefire deal?
Yeah, so Saturday is going to be a big day. The remaining six live hostages that Hamas has committed to releasing in this first phase will be released, including two have been held for around a decade. And they'll be released in exchange for more than 600 Palestinians released from Israeli jails. This first phase of the deal ends on March 2nd. And so far, talks for the next phase haven't started yet. They were supposed to start weeks ago. So we're really just waiting to see what happens with that. You know, meanwhile, there still will be dozens of Israeli hostages in Gaza, around half of them are believed to be alive.
That is NPR's Kat Lonsdorf in Tel Aviv. Thank you, Kat.
Thank you.